The U.S. Israeli genocidal war in Gaza enters its 127th day, with fresh airstrikes killing at least 25 more Palestinians in the Strip's most populated city of Rafah. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah intensifies military operations against the Israeli army using precision-guided missiles. And Yemenis voice their full support for Gaza as Sana'a vows to continue barring any Israeli-linked vessels from entering the Red Sea. Welcome to our studios in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. We start this bulletin with the ongoing Israeli genocide in Gaza. Dozens more have lost their lives in the latest Israeli airstrikes on Rafah ahead of a looming ground assault on the southern city. The attacks come as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has ordered the regime's military to prepare for the ground offensive. He also told the military to submit a plan to the Israeli cabinet for the evacuation of people from Rafah. The order was issued despite warnings that the assault may cause catastrophic humanitarian conditions. That is because Rafah is hosting some 1.3 million Palestinians, including those displaced from other parts of the besieged territory. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas warns that Israel's ground offensive into Rafah may kill or injure tens of thousands of people. The Israeli regime is trying to push Palestinians out of Gaza Strip by bombing and by shelling schools, buildings, and even hospitals used by civilians as shelter. Palestinians say that there is no safe place left in Gaza as Israeli soldiers shoot whoever they see walking in the city. We discuss the issue in detail in our news review program.
Joining us now for the program is Saad Nimr, professor of political science, joining us from Birzeit University from occupied Ramallah. And Mustafa Fatouri, Libyan academic and journalist, joining us from Paris. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program here. I guess we will start there in Ramallah with you, Professor Nimr. Hope you're safe and doing well. And now, Professor Nimr, the UN humanitarian chief, Martin Griffiths, on the displaced Palestinians in Rafah, said it's unthinkable suffering they're going through. They've been on the move for months, braving bombs, disease, and hunger. He asks, where are they supposed to go? How are they supposed to be safe? Please try to help us explain that or answer that question, sir.
It's quite clear that the Israeli forces are, you know, forcing more and more on the Palestinians, which creating a condition of a disaster in terms of the humanitarian conditions for the Palestinians. We are talking about Rafah. Rafah now is almost more than 1.5 million people who are evacuated from different areas around Gaza. Now they are going to Rafah, and there isn't enough places even for them. And we are talking about even tents being established on the roads and on the pavements and everywhere. Rafah is about 65 square kilometers, and you are talking about 1.5 million. That would make it, you know, more than 27,000 in each kilometer, which is the highest density ever in the world. And that means also there is lack of food, water, and even medical supplies and all other means of humanitarian aid, which is coming through Rafah crossing, but in a very, very little amounts that the Israeli allowed, and also delaying it of reaching. We are talking about only around 100 trucks every day. While in normal terms, through that crossing, they used to receive more than 500. That is in a normal time. Now in the war, it's less than or around 100 a day, which is barely enough for, you know, few thousands of people, not to mention 1.5 million.
Mustafa Fatouri, welcome to the program, sir. Now, Mr. Fatouri, we know that Benjamin Netanyahu has asked his military brass to submit an evacuation plan to his cabinet. This is a military that has shown zero concern four civilian casualties to an extreme far-right cabinet that we've heard doesn't even look at Palestinians as human beings. We've seen, heard the rhetoric from this cabinet. How concerned are you that this plan of evacuation, whatever they want to call it, is going to be devastating for the local population there in Rafah?
Their master plan, if you like, is to evacuate the Palestinians and push them out of Gaza, at least as many Palestinians as possible. And the tactical plan has always been to kill as many as possible. And that's also another way of quote-unquote evacuation, if you like. You evacuate the place by killing the people who are occupying that place. What the Israeli Prime Minister, the terrorist Netanyahu, has asked the military to do now is to commit a horrendous crime, you know, a complete genocide crime, by deciding to evacuate the Rafah area or the Rafah city, which is where most of the Palestinians are after they have been pushed out of their homes and their land in the north of the Gaza Strip from Gaza City itself. But I'm not sure if Mr. Terrorist Netanyahu is actually capable of carrying out the plan faced with such an international rejection, especially from world capital that usually support the Israeli entity, including Washington, which has rejected this.
We saw the head of the Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, his exact quote, "Rafah has now become the largest refugee camp on earth, and you cannot have a war in a refugee camp." Now, if the Israelis do not want to push him down to Sana'a, the local population there, and they do, to Professor Nimmer's point, go back to the central parts, there aren't homes and hospitals that are functional. There isn't enough food, fuel, or clean water outside of Rafah. How do you support 1.4 million displaced people that have been displaced 3, 4, 5 times in other parts of the besieged enclave?
Yeah, that's very true, unfortunately. I mean, the entire Gaza Strip has been for years, you know, it's like an open-air prison for over 2.2 million Palestinians, most of them children and women. And this has been played out again in the case of Rafah we are talking about now. So what really the Israelis want to do, they have already spoken about the possibility of ethnic cleansing, the possibility of pushing Palestinians out of Gaza, maybe towards Egypt or somewhere else, and there is no elsewhere to go. There is no safe place to go.
Thank you both for joining us on the program. Always a pleasure to check in with both of you. Professor Saad Al-Nimr there joining us from occupied Ramallah, and Mustafa Fatouri, Libyan academic and journalist, joining us out of Paris. That brings us to the end of this segment of your news review program. Thank you for joining us, and bye-bye for now.
The situation remains tense in the West Bank as the Israeli regime keeps pressing ahead with its atrocities in the occupied territories. In the latest raid, the regime's forces have abducted 14 Palestinians from the town of Beit Amr. Israeli troops erected barriers on the town's entrance, trapping residents while placing snipers on rooftops. Occupation forces also launched raids on other towns, including Bani Naim, east of the city of Al-Khalil. The town of Kaf Kadum was raided as well. Israeli forces and settlers have intensified their attacks across the occupied West Bank ever since the regime launched its genocidal war on the besieged Gaza Strip. According to the UN, at least 300 Palestinians have been killed and some 7,000 detained in Israeli raids on the occupied territories since early October. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah is pressing ahead with its retaliatory attacks against Israel. In the latest such operation, it targeted an Israeli Merkava tank along Lebanon's southern border. Hezbollah released the footage showing the attack on the armored vehicle at the al-Baghdadi site in occupied Palestinian territories. You can see the direct hit recorded by the camera mounted on the special guided missile. Hezbollah has increasingly been using precision-guided missiles to target Israeli military positions along the border. The attacks are part of the clashes that erupted between the two sides after the regime launched its onslaught on Gaza in early October. Most recently, Israel targeted the towns of Jabshit and Haruf in Lebanon's southern Nabatea governorate. Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian has met with the Secretary General of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement, Sayed Hassan Nasrallah. In the meeting in Beirut, Amir Abdollahian discussed the latest political and security developments in the region with Nasrallah. The situation in Gaza and southern Lebanon was high on the agenda of the talks. The two sides also exchanged views on the axis of resistance in the wake of the ongoing Israeli genocide in Gaza. The top Iranian diplomat also sat down with Lebanese Prime Minister Najib Mikati. Amir Abdollahian is in Lebanon as part of a West Asia tour. Following his visit to Beirut, he will head to the Syrian capital, Damascus. Earlier we spoke to Mariam Saleh, a correspondent in Beirut. She said that both Hezbollah and Israeli forces have intensified their attacks along Lebanon's southern border. Let's hear more from her.
Hezbollah has stepped up its operations, especially with the fact that the Israelis seem to also have been presumptuous in their attacks in South Lebanon. They have reached areas like Yuhmer Shkrif and the Nabatiye, which is some 20 kilometers away from the border. Hezbollah has also gone for this tit-for-tat way of dealing with the Israelis. Once the Israelis launch attacks that are near residential areas, civilian areas, Hezbollah is using rockets that do have cameras in them, and this is why they are able to see more precisely and target their basically those military targets. The Israelis have speculated on what type of rocket that is. Some are saying it's the Iranian Almas rocket, and that is a rocket that has many capabilities that could go beyond many obstacles. This allows the resistance to be able to see its target, even when it is in a way where you have many obstacles like hills or mountains and several posts. And in addition to, of course, the very high walls that have been built by the Israelis. And so this is why we see today for the second time how Hezbollah has targeted a Merkava tank using that type of rocket.
The top UN court is set to hold public hearings on the legal consequences of Israeli crimes in the occupied Palestinian territories. Over 50 states, including Iran, will participate in the oral proceedings before the International Court of Justice. The Arab League, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, and the African Union will also deliver statements. The week-long sessions will begin on February 19. At the request of the UN General Assembly, the ICJ will then issue a non-binding advisory opinion on the legal liability of Israel's occupation of Palestine. Last month, the ICJ announced its provisional ruling in a case brought by South Africa against Israel. It called on Israel to cease all activities that could constitute genocide in Gaza. However, the UN Special Rapporteur says that Israel appears to be in breach of that order. Thousands of Yemenis have once again gathered in the Yemeni capital Sana'a and other cities in support of Palestine. Abdul Latif al-Washali has more.
Yemenis from all walks of life have taken to the streets to reaffirm their solidarity with the Palestinian people. They have also expressed their willingness to join Yemen's armed forces in preparation for a potential large-scale conflict with the US and UK.
These million marches take place every Friday in the capital Sana'a and other cities to send a message to the world that we will not submit to intimidation, and also a message to the people of Gaza that we are with them and they are not alone. The spread of military courses in various governorates and the willingness of Yemenis to join them is evidence of the readiness of all Yemenis to confront American and British forces in a ground war.
Protesters chanted slogans denouncing US and UK aggression against their country and demanded that the Yemeni army continue its naval operations against those who initiated a war against Yemen.
These millions who took to the streets are a reserve army and are ready at any moment to join the Yemeni armed forces in their battle with the enemies of Palestine, whether on the land or at sea.
Our protest today is to express the steadfastness of our support for the Palestinian people and the people of Gaza in particular, who suffer under the siege by America and Israel, who kill their children, women, and the elderly on a daily basis. We affirm our support for Palestine and we will continue to support it, whether through naval operations or by going out to the streets.
Since January 11th, the US and UK have launched multiple rounds of airstrikes against Yemeni territories aimed at undermining the Yemeni army's capabilities and halting Yemen's naval operations. However, they have likely failed to achieve their goals as Yemeni naval attacks have continued.
People gathered here to protest, holding their weapons to send the message to their enemies that they are well prepared for any act of aggression. They believe that the US and UK are not bold enough to attempt invading Yemen overland. Abdul Latif Washali, Sana'a.
The Iranian embassy to the Holy See has celebrated the 45th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution with a reception held in Rome, attended by tens of diplomats and officials. Attendees have stressed the importance of remaining open to dialogue at a time when divisions between nations grow deeper and wider.
On Friday, the Embassy of Iran to the Holy See hosted a reception at the ambassador's residence in Rome to mark the 45th anniversary of the victory of Iran's Islamic Revolution. Tens of diplomats, officials, and embassy staff from several countries, including Iraq, Japan, Angola, Turkey, and some EU member states, were welcomed by the Iranian ambassador Mohammad Hossein Mokhtari, who has only recently presented his credentials to Pope Francis.
We are celebrating the 45th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. While we see at the Palestine, you know, oppressed people have been, you know, martyred, including women, innocent children.
During the reception, Ambassador Mokhtari stressed the importance of the teachings of the late founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini, and the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, particularly when they focused on the significance of dialogue between religions and cultures.
Dialogue is always a key element in our personal lives. Dialogue is central in our communities, and it is an irreplaceable tool of peace between peoples.
I've come here with great pleasure, as these kinds of initiatives are an expression of brotherhood in these times of heightened tension and uncertainty.
The ongoing conflicts in Ukraine and in the Gaza Strip, where Israel has slaughtered more than 28,000 Palestinians since the start of its offensive, have accelerated the decline of the U.S.-led world order.
Iran and the Holy See have maintained diplomatic ties for decades. Both Tehran and the Vatican City are in favor of a multilateral world order which is no longer dominated by the Western hegemony.
It is, you know, the duty of the religious scholars, especially, you know, leaders of the religions, to fight against such aggression. It is our religious duty to defend oppressed people.
Celebrations for the 45th anniversary of the Iranian Revolution will also be held at the Rome's residence of the Iranian Embassy to Italy on Monday. Max Civili, Rome.
And that is for this edition of World News. It's bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Geneva-based Euromed Human Rights Monitor has recently issued a report detailing testimonies from a group of free detainees from Gaza. The report reveals details of torture by the Zionist regime authorities. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, as new testimonies from recently released Palestinian detainees from the Gaza Strip, including women and children, reveal details of torture by the Zionist regime authorities, the resistance movement Hamas has called on international rights groups to investigate these crimes. Geneva-based Euromed Human Rights Monitor recently issued a report detailing testimonies from a group of free detainees who spent varying lengths of time in Israeli regime jails and detention centers. The report said these individuals confirmed that they were subjected to severe beatings, dog attacks, strip searches, and denial of food and bathroom access, among other cruel practices that amount to torture. Most concerning testimonies that Euromed Monitor received concern female detainees who were directly sexually harassed. The female detainees who preferred to remain unidentified due to safety concerns said that Israeli troops had harassed them by touching them as well as making them remove their headscarves. The rights group confirmed that the troops forced the female detainees and their families into providing information about others by threatening to indecently assault and even rape them. A 70-year-old man who requested anonymity spoke with Euromed Monitor's team as well, identified only as MN, the man said. The Zionist regime troops took him from his house in the neighborhood of Al-Amal in Khan Yunis. MN explained that the Zionist regime troops made more arrests later on and led us to a detention facility that was nothing more than an iron cage for severe torture. He spent 10 days confined to the prison. MN added, we were subjected to daily insults and beatings. We went 4 days without drinking anything. They poured water on the ground in front of us as a form of torture. We were made to sit on our knees, given little food, and only allowed to use the restroom once. Another man known as KHN said, they asked us to evacuate, so I left with my family west of Khan Yunis. He said the Zionist regime troops abducted him at the checkpoint and forced me to take off my clothes. I was severely beaten. Blankets soaked with water were draped over us. We did not drink any water and were abnormally cold. KHN stated that the Zionist regime army later transferred us to another place.
where we were subjected to another form of torture. Every new place had a unique method of torture. The severe cold prevented him from falling asleep, he told Euromed Monitor. A third man, identified as M.W., told the rights organization that he was abducted from Beit Lahia and forced him to completely undress. He added, "They threatened to rape my family and ask for information that I did not know. They forced us to insult certain factions and personalities, to support Israel, and to say that the dog that was attacking us was the crown on our head." A woman identified as G said she was abducted at a checkpoint on Salahuddin Street. She said, "They asked me to head to a sand berm where they blindfolded me, searched me with their hands, and asked me about Hamas and the tunnels." The woman continued, "Then they moved me to an open area, then transferred me to a detention center where I was forced to take off my clothes. They provided me with nothing but house clothes and no food." She was questioned multiple times while in custody, she told the rights organization. In response to recent revelations from free detainees, the resistance movement Hamas said, "We call on human rights and international institutions to follow up on the horrifying testimonies given by Palestinian detainees from Gaza who were recently released of the physical and psychological torture and violations they suffer in the prisons of the occupation, which deliberately conceals their places of detention, their numbers, and the condition of their detention." These testimonies, the resistance group Hamas said, are new evidence that they, the Israeli forces, committed war crimes and crimes against humanity, which requires legal prosecution before international courts. Euromed Monitor has called on the Zionist regime to promptly reveal the names, whereabouts, and fate of all forcibly disappeared detainees, and to immediately stop its policy of torture and ill-treatment of Palestinian detainees. It is stressed that the Zionist regime's ruthless assaults on Palestinian detainees, which violate their dignity and purposefully cause them great pain and suffering, are tantamount to crimes against humanity and/or torture, which fall under the purview of war crimes and crimes against humanity as defined by the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court. According to the Rome Statute, enforced disappearance is considered a crime against humanity, Euromed said. The group also called on the International Committee of the Red Cross to bear its responsibilities and verify the detention conditions of Palestinian detainees in the Zionist regime prisons.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
The audience of IRB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Ja'far Ja'far.
I begin in the name of Allah, the most kind, the most merciful. It's due to that kindness and mercy that we have these opportunities where we gather in remembrance and glorification of Him, Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, with the discussion that we've been having for the last six lectures, and that's the discussion on Shaitan And today, inshallah, we try to wrap up the discussion of shaitan. And one of the findings we have is that shaitan is not unintelligent. Shaitan is very well aware of what he does. Shaitan is also very well aware of his capacity and his reach. And so the concept of turning to God entirely in seeking his assistance to fight off shaitan, as we said, is known as isti'adha, right? Isti'adha, we began the discussion of it on Thursday night. Isti'adha literally means to seek the protection of Allah from shaitan. And we do it verbally by saying, A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. That's isti'adha in a nutshell, right? But we said that naturally we are very well aware that isti'adha cannot just be a verbal declaration, right? There has to be something concrete to back up my verbal statement. And so we said naturally, like, it can't just be a verbal declaration, right? The verbal declaration has to be backed up with something concrete to show that I'm sincere with what I'm saying. And so we said isti'adha, or seeking God's protection, is made up of two components. The first component is to show God that we really need Him. And there's a specific way that we've been told to do this. And there are five things we talked about. The first one, I need to increase my faith. And we went into a lot of detail what it means to show God that I have faith in Him, that I believe that He can protect me. And I believe that firmly. And then you match that faith with obedience, right? And obedience here is necessary, right? Like, I can't say that I have faith in God while my actions display something contrary. Right? So submission is so important. Obedience is so important. And so that's the second step of isti'adha. Then the third step we said was taqwa. And again, we talked about that. And then tawakkul and sincerity. All of these things, Allah mentions in the Quran that if you do these things, I will protect you from shaitan. Right? So that's one half of the battle. One half of the battle is to demonstrate to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that I need His assistance. And that demonstration happens through these five things that we talk about. The second thing is that once I come to God and I say, Ya Allah, I need You, at the same time Allah will assist me, but how is He going to assist me, right? He's going to assist me by providing me the tools to fight shaitan, right? So what that means is the second step is that I have to utilize the tools that God has given me to fight shaitan. Then that's the second step, right? Like, nothing is like magical, you know what I mean? So it's not like, Ya Allah, I need Your help, and then Allah like puts shaitan in jail, you know? He says, now I've helped you. No, He says, now help yourself. Here's the tools, go help yourself, right? Because that's how God works. Like, I say, Ya Allah, I need rizq. He'll say, here, go work, I'll provide you rizq. You have to do something. We have to do something, right? And so there are certain tools that God has given us, and that's what we're going to talk about today. It's the utilization of certain tools that when I add it to that first component that we talked about on Thursday, together these two components make up isti'adha. And if I can do both of them, it'll have a very powerful effect. And so number one, I have to utilize these tools. And there are three tools that Allah has given us, yeah, that are really important for us to be able to fight off shaitan. The first tool is our intellect, right? Our intellect. The intellect is one of these discussions that requires its own series, yeah, and we will talk about it, inshallah. But so today I just want to kind of just touch it, because intellect is deep. What has been given to us and the research and the description of the intellect that we have in our sources is really profound, because it means a lot of things. I think when we talk about intellect, like, don't equate it to what we classify as somebody being intellectual, right? So like in our world, somebody intellectual is somebody who has a high IQ score, somebody who has street smarts, somebody who has a degree. God doesn't really care about those things. You know what I mean? God has a very specific definition of one who is considered to be an intellectual, an aqil, right? Intellectual sounds funny, an aqil, right? Comes from the word aqal. Aqil is one who has an intellect. But again, as we will learn, intellect or an aqil is something very specific in Islam. And so we have to try to be an aqil and use this aqil to help fight shaitan. Our intellect, what we have to understand, is a gift from Allah. Right? And it is a gift that is designed to understand how this world works and then see what our role is in that world. Like, one of the main functionalities of the intellect is to be able to distinguish between good and bad, right and wrong. Right? This was beautiful about our religion. Our seventh Imam, Al-Kazim, alayhi afdalus salatu was salam. Allahumma salli ala wa ali Muhammad. Where he says to his companion Hisham, he says, Ya Hisham, inna lillahi ala nasi hujjatain. He says that, oh Hisham, that Allah has two proofs against people. So whenever God creates someone, He has given two authorities, two proofs. The purpose of these two proofs are what? So that we don't have an argument against God. But you didn't do this enough. You didn't do that. If you had just done that, I would have done this. Allah says, I gave you two arguments, right? I have done everything that I need to prove that I exist and what the path is. God has made it very clear. Hujjatu zahira wa hujjatan batina. That Allah has given us an internal proof and an external proof. Together, these proofs make up the full proof that I need to believe in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He says, فَأَمَّا الظَّاهِرَ, that's the external proof, فَالرَّسُولُ وَالْأَنْبِيَا وَالْأَئِمَّةُ. Yeah, they are the prophets and the imams and the final messenger that came. They are this external proof, right? This external proof is something that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sends. The Qur'an and the Kitab, Samawat, all of these things that are part of the external proofs of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. وَأَمَّا الْبَاطِنَ فَالْأُقُولِ. Yeah, as far as the internal proof is concerned, it is the intellect, right? And it's the intellect. Like, whether or not, you know, like if you think about it, the intellect, there are certain standard principles that exist within an intellect that are common no matter where we live. And these are the ability to distinguish between right and wrong, good and bad, right? And this, you don't need God to tell us lying is bad. You don't need God to tell us hurting someone is bad. You don't need God to tell us cheating is bad, right? Like, these are things we know. These are not good things, right? And so even when we do it the first time while we're young, we feel a sense of shock, right? Like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Because you feel guilty. And that guilt is something that is very natural. And so we have internally ourselves the ability to distinguish between right and wrong. And this is, again, fundamental for us to be a good human being. The second proof is the external proof that we'll talk about. But the first, again, is the intellect. And it's this by this intellect that we are going to be, like, it's this intellect and how we use this intellect that's going to determine how we are rewarded and punished by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahim Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mateen. شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you.
visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The United Nations has declared that Israeli attacks on Rafah in southern Gaza could result in large-scale loss of civilian lives. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. The United Nations Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says Israeli attacks on Rafah in southern Gaza on the border with Egypt could lead to large-scale loss of civilian lives. Jens Lerke, a spokesperson for the UN Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, said, "To be clear, intensified hostilities in Rafah in this situation could lead to large-scale loss of civilian lives, and we must do everything possible within our power to avoid that." He added, "Under international humanitarian law, indiscriminate bombing of densely populated areas may amount to war crimes." Jens Lerke, a spokesperson for the UN Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, was speaking in Geneva, Switzerland. He said, "We can warn what might unfold with the ground invasion, and we can make clear what the law says." The Israeli regime has pressed on with its genocidal campaign and threatened a new ground assault on Rafah, where over half of Gaza's 2.3 million population are now living, mostly in makeshift tents. About 1.4 million people are sheltering in Rafah after being ordered there by Israeli forces, which previously described the area as a safe zone. The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, recently reported that intensified Israeli bombardment from air, land and sea continues across much of the Gaza Strip, resulting in further civilian casualties, displacement of the population and destruction of civilian infrastructure. The UN Humanitarian Office said, "The influx of thousands of internally displaced persons into Rafah was due to intense fighting in Khan Yunis, combined with reports of an increase in strikes in Rafah on Monday and Sunday." In its latest aggression, the Israeli regime killed several people, including two children, in a new airstrike on the southern Gaza city of Rafah. Elsewhere in southern Gaza, the Israeli army targeted the vicinity of Nasser Hospital, that's located in the city of Khan Yunis, which has been the focal point of Israeli strikes in recent weeks. In separate attacks on the same city, at least 11 people lost their lives. The genocidal war against Gaza has continued for over 4 months now, with a death toll approaching 27,600 as of Tuesday, 6th of February, many of those women and children. Also, a senior commander of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC, has warned the Israeli regime that endangering Iran's interests anywhere in the world will not go unanswered. Brigadier General Abbas Nilfurushan, the IRGC's deputy commander for operations, said, "The Israeli regime should know that we settle our score with our enemies on a daily basis. We will not leave unanswered whatever action the Israeli regime dares to take against our interests anywhere in the world," Nilfurushan asserted on Tuesday, 6th of February. The top IRGC commander said, "The Islamic Republic is the most prominent missile and drone power in West Asia region," noting that the region's geopolitical configuration has changed based on Iran's power. He also said the United States is incapable of protecting the Zionist regime like in the past. He added, So the Israeli regime has resorted to the strategy of war between wars, or war in the grey zone. He said the main goal of such a strategy consists of attempting to weaken the constituents of Iran's power, such as the Islamic Republic's nuclear, missile, drone, and regional might. Neil Farrushan identified the main principles of the strategy as engaging in intelligence warfare and retaining the level of war beneath our threshold of tolerance. As a means of confronting the strategy, the top IRGC commander said, Iran has attached special importance to intelligence protection. Also, the leader of Yemen's Ansarullah resistance movement, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, says the recent rising aggression by the evil trio of the United States of America, Britain, and the Israeli regime against Yemen will not affect the determination of the Yemeni people to support Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. The leader of Yemen's Ansarullah movement, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, made the remark in a televised speech on Tuesday, 6th of February, to commemorate the 20th martyrdom anniversary of the former Ansarullah chief Hussein Badruddin al-Houthi. Badruddin al-Houthi was killed whilst leading a revolt against the then Saudi-backed regime in Sana'a in 2004. Abdul Malik al-Houthi said the late Ansarullah leader promoted steadfastness and sacrifice in the face of the US invasion and colonialism, and reaffirmed the necessity of unity and confronting the conspiracies targeting Muslim nations. He praised the courage of the Yemeni people in the fight against the global arrogance and threats from the hegemonic powers. He said, "Our nation today is a very great nation with the most important geographical locations, which enjoys very enormous economic resources, but it has been shackled," he said. The Ansarullah leader underscored Yemen's firm stance in supporting Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. He said Yemen will continue to launch retaliatory strikes on Israeli-tied shipping in the Red Sea, despite rising aggression by United States and Britain. Abdul Malik al-Houthi said, "The United States terrorizes most countries, most of their leaders, and most of their armies with the language of threat and intimidation. What is the position of our Islamic nation in comparison with the Arab world and elsewhere, who are hundreds of millions, regarding what's happening today in Palestine?" He added, "Our beloved people, despite the fact that after the aggression that lasted 9 years and has not ended yet, took a distinguished position, we set out to confront the evil trio of the United States, Britain, and the Israeli regime, and we are ready for the sacrifices, and we are confident of victory." He stressed that Yemen is a free country which cannot be influenced by US hegemony. He said, "If we had been followers of treason and connivance, the Americans and the British would not have carried out the aggression against us." Abdul Malik al-Houthi said, "No matter what the evil trio does, it will not affect our position and it will not break the will of the Yemeni people." He vowed to back the Palestinian people and their cause until the very end. Turkey's Anadolu News Agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. The United Nations Humanitarian Office has warned on Tuesday, 6th of February, that everything possible must be done to avoid intensified hostilities in Rafah City in southern Gaza Strip, which may lead to a large-scale loss of civilian lives. Jens Lerke, the spokesperson for the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, told the United Nations briefing in Geneva, Switzerland, he said, "We can warn what might unfold with a ground invasion, and we can make clear what the law says, and under international humanitarian law, indiscriminate bombing of densely populated areas may amount to war crimes." He added, So to be clear, intensified hostilities in Rafah in this situation could lead to large-scale loss of civilian lives, and we must do everything possible within our power to avoid that. The Israeli regime's war minister, Yoav Gallant, recently announced that Rafah is the Israeli army's next target in a press conference, claiming that Rafah is the last remaining stronghold of the Palestinian Islamic Resistance group Hamas. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza announced on Tuesday, 6th of February, that at least 27,585 Palestinians have been killed and 66,978 others injured in Israeli attacks on Gaza since 7th of October last year. The Israeli offensive on Gaza has left 85% of the population internally displaced amid acute shortages of food, clean water and medicine, while 60% of Gaza's infrastructure has been damaged or destroyed, according to figures by the United Nations. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel. Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
On the occasion of the 40th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution, February 11th, 2019, the jihadi management strategies inspired by Islamic faith and the belief in the principle of we can do it that Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh had taught us all assisted Iran in its achievement of dignity and progress on various areas. The revolution put an end to a long historical decadence, and the country, which was severely humiliated and utterly retrograded during the Pahlavi and Qajar dynasties, started to progress rapidly. In its first step, the revolution turned the disgraceful regime of the tyrannical monarchy into a popular and democratic state and employed the element of national determination, which is the essence of comprehensive and genuine progress to the heart of the country's governance. Then it turned the youth into the main forerunners of the developments and the key players in the management of the country. It conveyed the we can do it spirit and belief to everyone. Thanks to the enemy's sanctions, it taught everyone to rely on domestic capacities, and this unfolded a source of great blessings.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Firstly, it guaranteed the stability and security of the country, the territorial integrity, and the protection of the borders, which were targeted by the enemy's serious threats, and gave rise to the miracle of victory in the Eight-Year War, leading to the defeat of the Ba'athist regime and its American, European, and Eastern supporters. Secondly, it acted as the country's engine in developing the field of science and technology, and in creating the vital economic and constructional infrastructures which continue to grow more prevalent day by day. Several thousands of knowledge enterprises, several thousands of infrastructure and necessary projects for the country in the areas of civil engineering and transportation, industry, power, mining, healthcare, agriculture and water, millions of university graduates or students, thousands of colleges and universities throughout the country, dozens of big projects, such as the nuclear fuel cycle, stem cells, nanotechnology, biotechnology, etc., all ranking among the top of the world.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.